This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Is it just me, or has TV gotten really complicated? I'm either endlessly searching for my favorite shows or subscribing to a dozen different streaming services to make sure I can watch everything I love. And I'm not even saving that much money compared to my old cable bill. Thankfully, Philo has changed all that for me. One service, all the stuff I need. Philo's got current seasons of the shows I can't miss live on networks like Paramount, A&E, MTV, Discovery, and TLC. Classics like The Office, Martin, and Friends that I never get sick of, and all of the incredible originals on AMC Plus, from Mad Men to Orphan Black. Don't forget their library of more than 75,000 movies and shows, all of which I can save and re-watch anytime for a whole year. Never miss a minute of shows like Gypsy Rose, Life After Lockup on Lifetime, Yellowstone, or Fatal Attraction. Best of all, with Philo, you get all this for just $28 a month. No contracts, no hassles. Just one subscription and a world of entertainment. So go to philo.tv and check it out for a free 7-day trial. That's philo.tv to start watching. It's better
over here. Now at T-Mobile, get four 5G phones on us and four lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phones via 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
Money Crimes is a podcast all about the dark side of finance and sometimes murder. Find Money Crimes on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show with Zach and Josh, brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com.
Welcome in, everybody. Zach Jones, Josh Schmidt here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show, brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com. Good Monday Night Football game last night. Quentin Johnston can't catch again. We're back to where we were last year. That's
all
super
is
fun.
Right in the universe.
Derrick Henry, Saquon Barkley putting together a really, really fun rushing title race here, both at 1,300 yards. The next closest, Josh Jacobs, not even over 1,000 yards yet. It is between those two guys, and they're having a ball. Where I want to start today, though, was about 5 minutes ago, as we're getting ready to come in here. Jerry Jones, Cowboys owner and GM, meeting on his local, or you know, his weekly radio appearance on 105.3 The Fan over in Dallas, will not rule out a contract extension for Mike McCarthy. Quote, "I don't think that's crazy at all. This is a Super Bowl winning coach. Mike McCarthy has been there and done that. He has great ideas. We've got a lot of football left."
I'm sold. Get this man a piece of paper and a pen. Write up that contract right now, Jerry. Do it. Please do it. Because I would love for nothing more than the Cowboys to be terrible for the next however many years they decide to sign him. Because that is the stupidest thing I've ever heard.
I love him so much. That is the most asinine way of thinking. Is he won a Super Bowl in, what, 2010? Yeah, he still got it.
14 years ago.
He hasn't been good since, but he still got it.
14 years.
Oh, baby. That's so good.
Like, that is... What is that logic? Where is that line of thinking? I don't know why I'm getting so upset about this, but it's frustrating because it's like how are you that dumb? How are you that out of touch with your team that you
the moves he makes though kind of tells you.
Well, right, I guess that's true.
He kept Jason Garrett well past his expiration date because he essentially saw him like family. Mike McCarthy's the perfect yes man to him, probably doesn't say anything bad, just does exactly what Jerry wants. And they have no issues.
And that's the issue with the Cowboys. It makes complete sense. Jerry Jones is surrounded by yes men.
It's his family,
and they're also complacent. It feels like they're complacent anyway. Because
oh my god, yeah.
Even though they sit there and they're all upset because they're losing, the management and the ownership group just seems like, eh, well, it'll work its way out. We're still America's team. We are in Dallas, Texas.
We make a ton of money.
Yeah, we make a ton of money regardless of how bad we are. Like because.
It's
tough,
so good.
Tough day for Yankees fans because you know that also means their football team's going down.
But I did want to start there real quick because I saw it pop up and I was like, "There's no way."
That's crazy. That is absolutely crazy because it's like think about how many other coaches are available or will or could be available this offseason. Brian Daboll might be available. I mean, he hasn't been fired yet, but it feels like the writing's on the wall in New York with what's going on there.
Yeah, that's
and
insane.
That's something where it's even crazier because he's only gotten a short amount of time there.
This is his third year, yeah.
Right. Like, you're looking at Mike McCarthy. When did he get to Dallas?
Well, I think it's been around the same amount of time.
Has it really?
I think so. I just will never forget, like, his opening press conference where he just kind of straight up joking, but also being completely truthful. I lied basically on my resume after he said, like, I watched every single game the Cowboys play the year prior. This is his fourth year. He's been there since 2020.
Really? I could have swore it's been longer
but
than
he,
that.
But he was talking about how I've watched – or sorry, this is his fifth year. He's like, I've watched every single game of the past year. Like, I know exactly how to work this team. Opening day press conference, I totally lied. Yeah, I watched a few of their games. And Jerry's sitting there, and you can see he's like getting frustrated by it. And I'm like, oh, cool, that's how this is going to start.
Yep.
Now, to be fair, after 2020, where they went 6-10, 12-5, 12-5, 12-5.
Yeah, no, they've been consistent up to this point, but now it's like you're having all these problems on and off the field in terms of, you know, the play on the field is bad.
Yeah.
And the play off the field stuff is the players just they're checked out. He's lost the room. You know, and to not be able to see that as the owner and general manager of your team is just, that's malpractice. Like, I don't understand how you can sit there and not realize that this guy is probably the most hated guy in your organization from internally and externally, aside from yourself.
I was going to say, I wouldn't say he's the most hated guy. Yeah,
aside
Jerry.
From yourself, yeah. But just looking at the way that they're set up and what they like the situation they have themselves in, and I just if I'm a Cowboys fan, I mean, man.
Because you feel like you're just in no man's land.
Yeah,
you have an owner/GM. Well, and that's a key point too.
Because it's not like
he's also the owner.
Right,
so
he
won't fire himself as the GM. He's going to keep doing it. You watched already a program in New England have a head coach GM and get to a point where, okay, he needs to be fired at least as the GM. This is terrible. And it still went on forever until eventually he was axed and gone. This never works out well.
The only way you would have any hope is if that it was the GM that was saying this. But it is the GM, obviously, but not being the owner as well. Like, the owner would have to step in and say something about this. And I don't know if anyone in that organization will or could, because like we were just talking about, he's surrounded by yes men. He's surrounded by people that are, yep, yeah, sounds great, Jerry, whatever you want.
Because it's his family.
Keep raking in the money.
It's his family. Like, that's a big reason why is most of his children are in Maine.
At what point? Because you got to think, when you're an owner of a team, you're not buying that team because you want to just buy it. You're buying the team because you probably like it a little bit, right? I mean, at least to start. And then as you go on over the course of the years, you're probably the team's biggest fan. You're the team's biggest supporter, right? Like, think about it that way. And if you're Jerry Jones's kids, or even if you're Jerry Jones at this point, like, you have to think at some point, I can't do anymore. I need to go out and get someone externally because this isn't working. And I don't want to see my team that I love do poorly.
Yeah,
and that's
I
and
have
that's
no
where
doubt
I'm,
in my mind that Jerry Jones loves the Cowboys and wants them to win. I think he loves himself more.
Yeah. No, that's definitely I don't doubt that at all, actually. But it's crazy though that like you can just like to be that egotistical and to also, I mean, like I said, like I feel like the people around him, even though they are yes men, sure, family specifically, like because obviously his sons, I think, are part of the ownership group.
Oh, right? Yeah.
So if you're them, you probably also have the same sort of love for the Cowboys, or who knows if there's family drama there. Maybe they don't. Maybe they resent the Cowboys for whatever. I don't know. That's me speculating. But like, looking at it from an outside perspective into how these internal conversations could go, There has to be someone in there that's screaming their head off saying, please stop this. This is ridiculous. Like, I cannot sit here and think that there's not one person in that organization that thinks that all of this is a terrible idea. I can't believe it. If there is, I don't know. I have to believe that there is someone in that ownership group that wants this to change.
I think there's absolutely people that want this to change. You won't get Jerry to do so. That's the tough part. You won't get him to do so.
Right.
I think as well. Let's look at the Mark McCarthy situation here real quick, and then we'll move off this because we might even have a weather game on Sunday, mm-hmm. which could be fun.
Yeah, we will.
McCarthy's making anywhere, and it's not known, but it's anywhere between $4 million and $7 million annually.
Mm-hmm.
The best coaching prospect in the NFL currently is Ben Johnson. He reportedly wanted $15 million a year.
Wow.
Steve Sarkisian, the head coach at Texas, is making a little over $10 million a year.
So you
he's
think
not
this is...
willing to pay for yeah. the best coaches. He's bringing in people that are yes men. They're going to do what he wants them to do and not break the bank to do so. He will never bring in Sark. He will never bring in Ben Johnson. He will never bring in Bill Belichick. They're not yes men, and they cost too much money.
Let's say this extension doesn't happen, right? What are his options? Because if that's the case, if he doesn't want to spend that money, if he doesn't want to go out and get a premium head coach or even just a good head coach.
Kellen Moore.
Ugh.
He's been in the organization, was their OC.
Yeah.
He knows everybody. It'd be Kellen Moore.
I guess.
Which, yeah, I mean, like that's what it
I'm
is,
I'm just
too.
Trying to think of other head coaches that could be considered like this, you know, they're not great, but they're good or they're decent, so they wouldn't cost as much money.
It'll be Kellen Moore.
Yeah.
So weather game potentially for the Bills.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, that's, you know what? We're switching off of a sour
like,
subject.
I guess.
Going to a fun one. Hey, no. This is fun. I love snow games. This would be great. And
I like
also,
snow games.
You're fulfilling George Kittle's dream. He's always wanted to play Josh Allen in the snow.
Oh, there we go.
Remember, that was the
there
thing when
yeah.
the schedule came out. He said he was excited to play in Buffalo in the wintertime because they haven't been here since 2016.
That's right.
That game was like in early October, late September.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, I mean, yeah. No chances. Well, not no chance of snow, but no snow in that game. So, and obviously, no George Kittle. So, he'd probably be pretty excited hearing that it's bumped up from 15% to 35% from what we've heard. In terms of weather stuff, I'm excited. I would love for it to. I want it to just start snowing because I need it to feel like Christmas time.
The key for these snow games, though, is a lot like what happened with Cleveland and Pittsburgh. It's got to snow during the game.
Yeah.
Not the day before
the
or during it, and then all of a sudden it becomes the excavators having to move all the snow and get ready to play.
I'm okay.
The peak aesthetic is during the game, it's snowing.
Yeah, I'm okay with it starting before the game, though, and then kind of like continuing as the game
sure,
goes
yeah.
on. Like Sunday night, or I'm sorry, like early Sunday morning. Mm-hmm. I don't want it to like do it like Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
Yeah, no.
But
no,
let's
no.
just say it starts overnight between Saturday to Sunday, right? That I think that's the perfect scenario because then you get a nice little coating and it keeps going on throughout the day and it's just like the vibe is there and the excitement is building and you know the Bills play that night so you don't have to, you know, you can watch other football throughout the day and look outside. Oh, look, it looks all like a snow globe outside. And, you know.
My only issue though with weather games is for a scenario like this. The San Francisco 49ers are right now not nearly as good of a team as Buffalo.
Mm.
The moment there is a huge weather event or just anything that kind of causes issues, it brings everyone together. Mm-hmm. All of a sudden, the team is not really running the ball that well, can start running the ball pretty well because they kind of have to.
Yeah.
And that's really what they're going to go in and game plan is. San Francisco, though, being a California team, I get it. Like, they're not going to have the wherewithal of necessarily dealing with snow,
right? Like they understand,
but they've also played Green Bay in Lambeau and beaten them in the playoffs, so that's not really there,
right? In the middle of January,
that's my issue is that all of a sudden, a game that maybe should be a blowout all of a sudden gets condensed a little bit because the weather has made it closer, the weather has been the ultimate equalizer, and I don't love that. I do not love that.
I mean, I don't think it'll be that much of an equalizer. It doesn't sound like this isn't going to be like the weather like we got in years past. This They were projecting, you know, maybe like 7 inches over the whole weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Not in one day, like over like 2 or 3 days.
It is not the Christmas storm from a few years ago.
Yeah,
correct?
Right,
yes.
Right. So I'm not necessarily worried about it being too much. I'm just worried about it in the sense of you have, like you were saying, like you have a team that will, one, kind of get more excited of, hey guys, let's go out there and have some fun. It's snowing and we're in Buffalo for the first time in forever. And, you know, we're only one game out of the top of the NFC West. Let's just go out and have some fun and see what happens. If you're the 49ers.
I don't know if that's going to be their attitude. This is an old team that has not gotten over the hump. They're pissed.
Well,
they're injured and upset. There is no, let's go have some fun.
No, I know. I don't mean it in the sense of like okay, maybe I worded it poorly. In terms of like getting hyped up, I feel like it might kind of give them more, maybe a little more hype, just because of the aesthetic of playing in the snow,
the scenery, the environment. It is
having
Sunday night
having
football.
Fun is not. The wording I used there was not great, but I just mean it more so in this thing, or potentially this game, kind of just hyping them up more because of what it is. It's Sunday night football in Buffalo in the snow against a team that just came off the bye week. But if it's not snowing, I don't really know how much that takes out of it either, because I still think that they're going to come in here with that mentality of this team is coming off the bye. We have to get over the hump. They have something to prove. Let's go out there and prove that we also do.
Well, that sort of thing. Then that's my thing too, and why I don't love that it could be a weather game that maybe shrinks, you know, the advantages the Bills have. This is a 49ers team that is feeling the end here.
Yeah.
If they lose this weekend, they'll be 5-7, and just looking at their schedule the rest of the way, it's not looking great for them. They have Buffalo, Chicago should probably be a win, but Chicago's starting to play a little bit better. That could absolutely be a loss. That's at home though. At home against the Rams. That's always tight. I think Shanahan
got to be
typically,
a win.
I think Shanahan. I don't have the stats right off the top of my head. I believe Shanahan has the advantage over McVay in terms of head to head matchups. But then you get Miami, Detroit, Arizona. Miami is playing much, much better, and you won't get them on that whole like cold weather stats with Tua and the Dolphins. They're playing a lot better. Detroit looks like a wagon, and Arizona is probably going to be trying to close out the NFC West there. That'll be a tight game.
Shanahan is 10-5 against McVay.
Yeah, so he has the advantage there. You feel good about that. That's Thursday Night Football, December 12th. They don't have a great schedule the rest of the way here. They really don't.
They only have one divisional win, too.
And
they can
realistically take, what, one more loss?
Maybe. But at the same time, that division is terrible.
It is.
There is so much left in that division in terms of, you know.
But it stops being terrible when Seattle takes on the Jets and they beat them, and they're all of a sudden 7-5.
Right.
And you know, maybe the Cardinals upset Minnesota, they're 7-5. Then all of a sudden you're sitting there at 5-7, going, all right, well, we're done. We've run out of time. We don't have enough games here. And we're not picking up wins. This is going to be a desperate team. And if you all of a sudden shrink the advantages for one team, I don't love that matchup.
Yeah.
I think they'll win it still. I just like would like to not freak out most of the game because my team can't pass the ball because it's snowing in the middle of it. And they've had to change up their game plans. Now, like you've brought up too, the report is not saying it's going to be this like unbelievable catastrophe of a weather game.
Yeah.
It is not going to be necessarily
as Cleveland and Pittsburgh was right now anyway.
Yeah. But that's what happened to Pittsburgh. Cleveland was not as good of a team. And yet the environment, the elements, made it a closer game. And that's a style Pittsburgh likes to play. They want to be a team that hits you in the mouth, runs the ball, but only passes kind of when they need to for big plays.
But that's not necessarily either of these teams, the Bills or the 49ers. Neither of them really play that way, I don't think. I mean, the 49ers, sure, they have Christian McCaffrey, but it's not really worked out with Christian McCaffrey so far because he's been so hurt.
Yeah,
can you play that style of play? You might want to, but can you actually do it? And
Trent Williams is also hurt, so that's against one of your key offensive linemen.
And then if you look at the flip side, like with the Bills, like I said, like sure, they've had great running back play from James Cook and Ray Davis, and even Ty Johnson at times too, but like that's not the Bills' style of play. The Bills' style of play is, you know, Allen finding a guy like Shakir, Coleman, or Cooper, and then also maybe creating something with his own legs. But it's both of these teams could be at a disadvantage here, but at the same time, I think that if you're looking at this from a Bills perspective, it's kind of hard not to get into the whole mentality of this is an old aging out team that if you get them one more loss.
If you just get on them early.
Yeah, right. But if you give them one more loss, they're kind of dead. So, like, you just got to go out there and get on them. But I don't know. It's tough because it's a weird mentality to be in because it's coming off the bye week. And it's an opponent that usually is very good. And they're just terrible.
Well, yeah, 3 months ago, you had Kansas City bye San Francisco.
Ooh. Yeah.
Now it's, okay, Kansas City you beat. And I argue probably should have, now looking at that the rest of their year, the whole thing. Yes, you beat them a lot in the regular season, but even this year, it looked like you should beat them.
Mm-hmm.
Bye week, San Francisco, oof, they're really hurt. They are constantly injured. We don't. Brock Purdy, cool. He threw a little bit yesterday, and apparently it went well. Does anyone believe anything the 49ers say anymore?
No.
Not really, especially with everything that went on with Christian McCaffrey, even somewhat Brandon Ayuk. They just – no one really believes Purdy's all that healthy. So even if he plays, how much is that really going to do? And even when he has played, there's a big reason why they are where they are at 5-6. Yes, he's had his good moments, but he is doing it kind of alone. It's been him and Juwan Jennings and sometimes George Kittle. George Kittle, though, having a very good year himself, but just it's not enough.
I mean, that Brandon Ayuk injury definitely hurts things, obviously, like that. But at the same time, he wasn't even that
good. No, he's not even a good year at all.
Like, yeah, in terms of a good year, he wasn't having one before he got hurt. But at the same time, you never know. I mean, he could have, you know, worked things out as he went on there, but obviously he got hurt, so it doesn't matter. He's not a factor.
This just feels like a team that should have arguably been doing what the Bills were doing, which is moving off aging talent, getting younger.
Right.
They don't really draft a lot of offensive linemen or defensive linemen.
This is almost what this whole transition season could have been.
Yeah.
If you look at it with like the way the Bills roster was built and the way the 49ers roster is built, I don't want to say it could have been this bad, but given everything that they had, if the 49ers don't get hurt though, if they don't have all these injuries, I think it's a completely different season.
Sure. Yeah, it's a somewhat of a last dance feeling.
Right, because then it's, you know, you have everyone there, you have all this talent that you've been building for years. Here's the last shot. But at the same time, we saw that early on in the season, and it wasn't really clicking.
No. He had missed most of training camp, and then it was a really it was off.
I don't mean just Brandon Ayuk. I mean everybody.
No, I mean it was off all year. The vibes have been bad. This is a team that kind of needed to start rebuilding. They'd made a ton of Super Bowls, but they had lost them partially due to quarterback play just was not good enough. Their trench play also arguably has not been good enough. They've had great players. Trent Williams has been great for a long time. He's older though. Fred Warner on the linebacking side of the things been great for a long time, but they are getting older. And they want to keep surviving. They want to keep pushing as long as they can. But now they've picked up injuries. They would actually be better off losing and continuing to lose and pick in like the top 10. Go get a Calvin Banks Jr. or one of these great offensive linemen in this draft class because it's a weak quarterback class as well. So that might also be your issue if you are picking 15, 16, because teams are like, we're going to take two quarterbacks max. Then we're going to tackles and defensive linemen because it's a good edge rusher class as well. That's what they need is actually to keep losing games, get younger and better in those spots. I was seeing today as well, Aaron Schatz with DVOA going over who's the likeliest to get the number one overall pick, and it's New England by quite a bit. I think they're at like 36%.
But they don't need a quarterback though. So it's
perfect for them. It's like we'll just go get an elite left tackle.
Yeah,
and we'll just put him in there. I think that's the way to build these teams. You've seen how the Bills have been able to do it. Where now they just got a rotation of offensive linemen and defensive linemen. Maybe not necessarily a ton of elite guys, but really good NFL players. So that when Spencer Brown is down for a game, Ryan Vandermark goes in and is good.
Yeah,
you have Osiris Torrance, who since his rookie year as a second round pick has literally not missed a start and is only getting better. He did start off slow this year, though, in terms of a sophomore slump, but he's continued to push through. And look, I won't be surprised if in the first round this year they add an edge rusher. Yeah. Von Miller's getting older. Rousseau they're going to want to pay, but they need more playmakers there. I wouldn't be surprised at all if they add that. But the 49ers add a ton of skill guys. They don't add a lot in the trenches. And that has made them very thin in those spots. And it has also made it to where, when these skill guys aren't hitting, they become frustrating to watch.
I do wonder, though, how much that changes after this season. Just because of the fact of, if you're Kyle Shanahan, who's their manager?
John Lynch.
John Lynch, yeah. If you're the two of them, if you're Shanahan and Lynch this season, you've already probably had conversations of, what's next? How are we going to build from this? Because every season is a building opportunity, right? Even if it's a losing season, you can still build from it. And you can still learn from it and move on. But the 49ers are in this weird spot where, next year they're going to have to make the decision to pay Brock Purdy or not.
Ugh, and I would not do
and
that.
And I wouldn't either. But you also have all the money to Brandon Ayuk right now. You have Christian McCaffrey, who is, when he's healthy, one of the best running backs in the league, but he can't stay healthy. And that's kind of it. offensively. You don't have much. You don't have consistent outputs from Deebo Samuel, and Elijah Mitchell can't stay healthy. He never really was anything. He was kind of a flash in the pan. Mm-hmm. And that's where it's like you look at this whole offensive unit, and you look at also the next two drafts and what they offer you. It's not skill players. It's tackles.
You're going to be fine at wide receiver if you want to add a wide receiver.
Sure, but at the same time, I think if you're looking at if you're San Francisco here, you've got to be building the lines on mm-hmm. both sides of the ball, because the defensive line is just as bad in terms of age and injury prone, like how injury prone people can be. I mean, that's the real focus here if you're San Francisco over the next year or two,
mm-hmm.
is going out and getting guys in the draft and also maybe trying to identify some free agents. But
this is where, like, you needed to trade Brandon Ayuk before the draft.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
You needed to add picks there, get younger. Because the Brandon Ayuk conversation was always weird to have, especially in the offseason, especially when it came to the Bills as well. He was not a number one receiver.
No.
He put up nice stats, but he was not a number one.
He was fringe.
He did really good in his scheme, but he was not the guy that you were going to sit there and go, I'm willing to pay him $30 million a year.
He was essentially a more flashy Gabe Davis.
No, I mean, he's better than that. It's just he's closer to the T. Higgins,
okay,
where I'm not willing to pay you that much money, but they're going to pay him this much money. They ultimately didn't, but you waited forever where a team like Pittsburgh was willing to, what, give you a second-round pick for him?
Mm-hmm.
Great, take it, move on. You need to get younger at certain spots. They already were willing to. They took Ricky Pearsall in the first round.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, his rookie year got off to a terrible start, not due to anything he did.
Right.
But then you also drafted Jacob Cowing in the fourth. You've been willing to move off of him.
Yeah,
and you didn't.
But what I was saying there with the Gabe Davis thing is the fact that you have something every once in a while. You don't have this peak consistency of what you expect out of a number one receiver, but you have a guy who thinks he is, and that's part of the problem as well. Is, you know, obviously, yeah, sure, get your money, get paid, but if you didn't necessarily earn it, then what are you negotiating all that for, right? Like, that's the most interesting part about that whole Brandon Ayuk mm-hmm. situation is it got so messy so quickly. But the 49ers had a point. They had a point to say, hey, look, you're not worth that, right? And then it comes down to, you know, if you want to lose the player or not, and they didn't want to lose the player. So eventually it all sorted out. But I look at their decisions up to this point, and they've put themselves in this position. They tried to go all in a few years ago when they got Christian McCaffrey. They tried to go all in when they signed Brandon Ayuk here, but it's too little too late. Like, it's not that year they got Christian McCaffrey. What year was that? Was that 2 years ago?
I think that was 3 years ago.
Okay.
I'm looking this up real quick. But I mean, no. When they got it, when they traded for him, that made sense. They were in a Super Bowl window,
but
2022. So yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So that was the year after they lost in the NFC Championship game to the eventual Super Bowl winners, because they lose to the Rams and the Rams win the Super Bowl in 2021, and then again they go into the 2022 season with this mindset of winning, which is correct. Yes, you were just almost in the Super Bowl. It's fine, but then you come into 2023, and it's the same old song and dance of you fell short. Then you get to the Super Bowl, and it's great, cool, awesome. Didn't win it again. Fell short again. Then you have to kind of look in the mirror if you're the 49ers and say, look, it might be time to tear it down. It might be time to start fresh. Because it's been so many times where you've either almost or gotten to the Super Bowl, and you've fallen short with this regime. Not necessarily the management and the coaches, mm-hmm. but the players. The players have been to that point so many times, and sure, that's great for experience and things like that, but it's not great for turnover. It's not great for the long-term success.
No, I mean, they took advantage of a bad NFC.
Yeah, oh yeah, for sure.
For a few years, they took advantage of a bad NFC. Time. They're getting to Super Bowls with Jimmy Garoppolo and Brock Purdy, in part because the NFC was not very good, and now the NFC is very good
mm-hmm.
and is very top-heavy, and they have maybe arguably two or three of the best teams in the NFL, Eagles, Detroit, definitely. Minnesota, you can argue. They're not even in a weird spot. They're in a clear spot of, we should lose games, get more talent, get healthy for next year, then we can maybe make another run here. But yeah, they've also got to have the discussions about paying Brock Purdy. I think those discussions too with paying quarterbacks has gotten ridiculous. Where now it's just because it's your turn and you're an okay starter, we're going to pay you this. No.
Yeah.
I think that's absurd.
He hasn't earned it, I don't think. He had a good season. All good, good-ish season.
But he was playing on one of the most talented, healthy rosters in the NFL, and then they weren't talented and healthy. And now you're seeing it. He's not able to elevate that roster, which is to no one's surprise. 803-0550, the number to call. We'll talk more on Bills 49ers upcoming Sunday night football. No reports yet on Bills injuries, though, for Purdy. He apparently was throwing a little bit yesterday. They're going to rest him today. We'll hopefully get more on that as the week progresses. Zach Jones, Josh Schmidt here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. This is WGR.
Love looking for Jaden Reed. Not there. Goes back the other way. Sets up a screen. Bouncing off of people and into the end zone. It's Tucker Kraft for the touchdown.
Tucker Kraft scoring on Sunday. Do have some college football news here. Mac Brown has been fired from North Carolina, former Texas head coach. The last time, actually, he had a 10-win season, 0-9, for the Texas Longhorns, 13-1, made it to the BCS National Championship game. They ultimately lost to Alabama. His last 10 coaching seasons, Josh, he has not gone over 9 games. His last 4 in Texas, 5-7, 8-5, 9-4, 8-5, ultimately fired after the 2013 season. Then North Carolina hired in 2019, 7-6, 8-4, 6-7, 9-5, 8-5, 6-5, fired today. Not great.
Also,
not great.
A little bit of thing from about 25 minutes ago. Former Pro Bowl linebacker Shaq Barrett, who announced his retirement from the NFL in July, has applied for reinstatement.
Oh.
Interesting.
He had a really good Dolphins, one season, I remember.
The Dolphins currently hold his contractual rights. So if he comes out of retirement, he'll be on the Dolphins roster.
I want to look at this one, because there was a season, I think it was when Tampa won the Super Bowl,
yep,
that he was awesome. Yeah, 19 and a half sacks in 2019.
Yeah.
That's right. He was awesome that year. 27 years old. I mean, really kind of exploded. A fine career up to that point with Denver. Then, his first season in Tampa Bay exploded. I mean, it could be a nice addition for Miami. He's just 32, I believe, at this point. His last season in Tampa, at 31 years old, 4.5 sacks. QB hits 9. Really down from even his years that were down from 2019. Really wasn't doing a ton with that. 3 tackles for loss as well.
I mean, hey, you know.
I know. It's nice for him. Who else is doing that? Was it Corey Davis, the wide receiver?
I think he tried
to do that, and then just nothing happened with there. And that's also a thing, too. You could arguably look at that with someone like Deshaun Watson. You miss like a year or two of NFL football. The game passes you by.
Right. And especially if you're that age, too. I mean, I don't know how old Shaq Barrett is, but Corey Davis specifically, like...
He's 29, 28, something like that.
Shaq Barrett?
Oh, no, Corey Davis.
Oh.
Shaq Barrett's 32.
Oh. In my head, I had those two flipped. I had Shaq Barrett as 29, 28.
I want to make sure on Corey Davis. He is 29.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So they were both older.
Right, but regardless, it goes to show you what happens, though, when you're out of the game for even a year. And, I mean, who knows? Maybe he comes back and he's great for 6 games for the Dolphins.
Could be. I want to talk about last night's game a little bit.
Okay.
Ravens take down the Chargers. It was a close game for a little while. J.K. Dobbins ultimately leaves in the second quarter with a knee injury, and that kind of derailed the Chargers a little bit. He had 6 rushes for 40 yards up to that point. He was having himself a very good game. Made a joke to start the game or to start the show here, but Quinn Johnston having a really tough day, including a major drop, 3rd and 6 to start the fourth quarter, about 10, 11 minutes left here, wide open on a drag route, drops it. He's going to easily run for the first down.
I just watched that too. You can watch in the video when, like, before the ball is, like, there's like 3 ball lengths until it gets to him, and he turns his head away.
Yeah, he's thinking about running up the field.
And that's I feel like that's such a simple mistake. Like, I don't understand how you can make that mistake, on a consistent basis, too.
The game's moving too fast. I mean, that's where that argument comes in. I still like the Chargers a lot. They, though, and this is because it's a Greg Roman-based offense, they need a run game to really get going. And when J.K. Dobbins went down, they had a real tough time getting it going and working from there. But Baltimore, I think Lamar Jackson's like 10-1 off a loss in his career. I mean, he is incredible. That throw to Rashad Bateman for a touchdown towards the end of the first half, 40 yards down the field, basically no window, and just drops it in a bucket to Bateman for a touchdown. It's incredible. I think that was Bateman's only catch. No, he did have one other one, but just incredible. Zay Flowers has turned into a real weapon for them as well.
Yeah, for sure.
I want another shot at Baltimore. Don't get me wrong. Like I've mentioned, I think they can take their defense. I really, really do.
Their offense is still pretty scary.
But their offense is awesome.
Yeah.
But they are just such a frustrating team. If you're a Ravens fan, this season has got to be frustrating. Last year, by this point, they were just blowing teams out. They just had zero issues running the table, whooping people, no issues at all. This year, you know, you lose to Pittsburgh, a team that you consistently lose to, and you still may lose the division too. But then you play a Chargers team on the road in, you know, arguably the most exciting game of the weekend, and you beat them. A lot of it too. They were able to be up front most of this game. Lamar only throws the ball 22 times. They're up front a lot. Really, again, only made throws really when he needed to for big plays. The Bateman one, as I mentioned. Derrick Henry, though, 24 rushing attempts. He was able to really lean on them. And then you also had Justice Hill, who 4 rushes, 55 yards.
What a touchdown.
But the long touchdown is really what did it for him.
That was really impressive, too, because he... It's funny, like when you see, obviously you're seeing Derrick Henry every single time, but then all of a sudden this other guy comes in and he supposedly is the backup and then he pops off for a 51-yard touchdown on his first, maybe not his first touch, but still. One of his very few touches of the game, he runs for 51 yards and kind of like it was speedier than I expected. Because when you watch Henry, it's not that he's not fast, but he's just large.
You are more. Yeah, like, you are more noticing how much bigger he is than almost everybody.
Right, and you saw it a few times last night. I mean, pulled out that stiff arm that all Bills fans saw when he was in Tennessee against the Bills and stiff arm Josh Norman into the benches.
But that play did not count. That does not exist.
Right, but it does exist because there's a highlight.
We'll never forget
every Derrick Henry highlight reel has that in there. But I look at that offense and Mark Andrews. Also, touchdown. Good for him. He's back.
Which, like, what was the official looking at?
Right.
When he like initially called that incomplete. That was like clear as day.
He caught
touchdown.
The ball. He caught the ball cleanly. Both feet went in bounds. And there was so much grass between his cleats and the white line. Like, I don't know what the official was looking for.
So bad. On the take, clearly, obviously.
Sure.
But
yeah, no. I mean, looking at that offense, like, kind of, because it's been a little shaky from time to time, right? Like, I mean,
they've had up and down games.
If you look at their season so far, there's a reason they're 8-4. There's a reason that they've had 4 losses because this offense is kind of consistently being inconsistent.
And all 4 of their losses have come, well, 3 of their 4 losses have come against teams you would argue they really had no business losing to. Mm-hmm. Kansas City, yes.
Well,
got it. They're 10-1. They should beat them.
Again,
Vegas,
that was a weird
though.
Game.
Vegas.
Yeah.
Should beat them. Cleveland. You should beat them. That's the Jameis Winston game, too. And then Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
They won kicking field goals.
Right.
You got to win that game.
And that game specifically was the one where you really saw the problem with the – or not the problem, but like you really saw the offense kind of have struggles. Mm-hmm. And I think it's just evident because of the fact that Pittsburgh didn't score any touchdowns.
And I will say this is also going to be something to keep an eye on with the Baltimore Ravens. I don't know if this is updated after last night, but they went into last night the most penalized team in the league. They still are. They had 9 last night.
Wow.
Again, don't know if this is updated, but
I would assume
currently what I'm looking at, they're at 101. Houston is behind them at 92. So, I mean, they're somewhat comfortably in the lead.
I mean, there's no way, because if you add in the 9 to 101, let's say it's not added, right? 9 plus 101 is 110. If the Texans had, what is that, 22 penalties?
It's or insane.
Something like that. Like there's, yeah. So the Ravens,
that is something also absolutely holding them back is how many penalties they're getting. But then, again, looking back at last night, there were certain points the Chargers could have gotten back in that game. It was bad mistakes by them. Quentin Johnston drops. Again, 3rd and 6, he's wide open. It's a great play design. He is going to run for like 25 more yards.
Yeah.
He beat his guy off the line. He's ready to go.
I mean,
and it's a drop.
If you're the Chargers at this point, what?
You need a wide receiver.
Because you can't trade for anybody, obviously. But like, what do you do? Like, you try to just find it internally, or maybe go pick somebody off a practice squad, or just start scheming other people open. I look at their roster, and it's you have LaMakonkey, who's had a great season so far as a rookie.
He's done exactly what most people thought he would.
Joshua Palmer, cool. Like, that's your third wide receiver behind Quentin Johnston. And then you have Jalen Reagor, DJ Shark, Darius Davis.
No, I mean, like, they need wide receiver help badly. The problem is, two straight years, they've gone early at wide receivers. Mm-hmm. Quentin Johnston and Ladd McConkey. Johnston,
one's been a
up
hit,
to this point, has been a miss.
Yeah.
And they're going to have to go back to that well again. That's not a spot you want to be into. And that's where, like, I look at the Chiefs as well. Like, you're seeing, like, some of their depth issues are starting to shine because they've had to go to that wide receiver well a lot early in the draft, where they've had a lot of hits on defense, not so many on offense. And they've had to keep going back to that well or just trading in season for guys. And it has not turned out all that well for them. But and I mean that in terms of, like, just draft capital and such. They've won two Super Bowls. Like, it has worked out for them in that sense. But in terms of going into every year thinking, oh, yeah, we're going to be better than last year, it hasn't necessarily. And maybe this year is finally the year that catches them. I mean, yesterday, Bulldog on our afternoon show brought it up, too. And I'm glad because I'm now not the only one feeling this way. At least I feel like I'm now starting to compare them to the 2020 Steelers and the 2022 Vikings. Mm-hmm. And even the Tennessee Titans that won the one seed a few years ago.
Yeah.
Win a playoff game.
Right.
I'm no longer thinking about three straight. I'm thinking about win a playoff game. Because that's where I'm at. It feels like any game they're going to have in either the wild card round or even the division round, if they do hold on to the one seed, it feels like that team will be able to get them. Well, it's going to be a close game. And yes, they can arguably be the best closing team or close game team in the NFL. Mm-hmm. But that does not last forever.
Yeah, because you see the way intensity turns up in the playoffs. Like, you've seen this every single year. There will be a team that comes in, like the Chiefs, that is riding high. Maybe not, obviously, 10-1, but still very good, had a good regular season. Like the Cowboys last year against Green Bay. Green Bay comes in as kind of the scrappy younger brother, essentially, and beats Dallas in Dallas.
Beats them to a pulp, yeah.
And then it starts snowing. They beat them so bad. Like, it's one of those things where I think you're right. I think the Chiefs could very well go into the playoffs if they don't get the first round bye, even if they do. And
be one and done.
And be one and done. Yeah. I mean, I still think they're going to get the first round bye. That game last night did drastically change things playoff-wise. I mean, if the Chargers could have got the win last night, that would have been huge in terms of the AFC West race. And they kind of let you down.
Yep. 803-0550, the number two call. When we come back, a little bit of tough news here locally in college football. We'll talk about that after a quick timeout. Zach Jones, Josh Schmidt on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. This is WGR.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Welcome back, everyone. Zach Jones, Josh Schmidt here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Get a little college football news in here today. Already mentioned Mack Brown fired from North Carolina. This will be his last season. He will finish out the season, though, for the Tar Heels. We got some action tonight. Toledo at Akron, 7 o'clock. Also at 7 o'clock, Kent State at Buffalo, the final regular season game of the year for the UB Bulls. They're 7-4, already bowl eligible, should be in a bowl game as well. You know, with the whole 6-6, 7-4, do they maybe get in? They should, and they should be 8-4 after tonight. The one thing, though, that is frustrating, they do not have a Butkus Award finalist, the Butkus Award being for the best linebacker. Both Sean Dolak and Red Murdoch, the leading tacklers in college football, 1 and 2, respectively, in the nation, both left off the finalist list. The finalist list ultimately goes Bear Carter out of Clemson, Chris Paul Jr. out of Mississippi, Carson No idea how to say that, out of UCLA. Dan Stutzman out of Oklahoma, and Jalen Walker out of Georgia. I also will say, as a Texas fan, I'm frustrated Anthony Hill Jr. is not on this list with 7.5 sacks as a sophomore. He has been unbelievable. But to not have Dolak on that just seems ridiculous.
It's egregious.
He's the leading tackler in FBS. He's second in interceptions with 5. He also has 4 sacks as well.
Is UB completely out of the MAC title
race? I don't believe so.
It's very unlikely, but they had to win and get a lot of help. I don't know what the formula is, but
they're 6-2. They're 5-2. Sorry, they could be 6-2 with a win tonight. Bowling Green, Ohio, and Miami of Ohio are all 6-1.
The one thing I read was that you're a big Ball State fan if you're a Bulls fan.
Mm-hmm.
You want Ball State to upset Ohio.
Yep,
3-8 versus 8-3.
But the problem is Miami of Ohio plays Bowling Green.
Yeah.
So, actually, no, that's not a problem because either one of them loses and you kind of gain a spot in standings.
Yeah, and you didn't play either of them this year, I believe. Mm-hmm. You did not. Did play so Ohio. Really, you did play Ohio, and that's why you want Ball State to beat them.
Right. So really, if Ball State wins and you have the tiebreaker over either Miami of Ohio or Bowling Green, then you're good, as long as you also win over Kent State.
Didn't there used to be a MAC East and
there
West?
Were divisions? Yeah, there were divisions.
Hmm. Is there no longer divisions?
No longer divisions.
Oh, okay.
It's been for a few years now.
So if all stands, it would just be Miami of Ohio versus Ohio in the MAC championship then.
As of the way it is right now, yes.
Okay, because I remember years ago it used to be the East Division would face someone from the West Division. Okay.
Yeah. So, but by the looks of it, obviously there's the tiebreakers and things like that. But if the Bulls win tonight, they'll be 6-2. Bowling Green or Miami of Ohio will be 6-2 as well.
Mm-hmm.
You kind of hope that it's Bowling Green. Actually, it doesn't really matter either way because you have more points for than both of the teams, which I'm assuming is one of the tiebreakers. I don't know which one it is, but I'm assuming it'll go to points differential or maybe it would be record over common opponents.
I think so.
Before that?
Yeah.
So,
So I actually think you do want Bowling Green because Miami of Ohio did beat Ohio.
Yeah. So you kind of want Bowling Green and you want Bowling Green to win.
I believe so.
And Ball State to win. Come on, Ball State. Do it for your old coach.
And then all of this goes down the line of Buffalo also needs to beat a winless Kent State team.
Obviously,
tonight
yes.
At 0-11.
That makes sense that we would need.
Yes.
That you would need to do that.
UB Bowls will be on our sister station, the Bet 1520, tonight. 6:30 pregame, 7 p.m. kickoff. Again, that's over on our sister station, the Bet 1520. Going to take a quick time out here. We come back. Also get a little Sabres talk in as well. They're not playing again until Wednesday, but they still sit in a playoff spot. However, if they don't win on Wednesday, that whole Thanksgiving stat might get thrown out the window. Zach Jones, Josh Mint here on the Northtown Automotive X Point Show on WGR.
You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show with Zach and Josh, brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com.
Yeah, I think we'll find out more today at practice and see how that goes, and then just go from there. You never want a player of his caliber on your lineup. One time out west, we were in games 19, 20, and 21, and you want to be smart with your players and making sure that you don't put them in a situation that the injury can become longer. Those are constant conversations between our medical team, our trainers, and our coaching staff, and I think we'll find out more here today.
Ayers Buffalo Sabres assistant head coach Seth Appert joined Jeremy and Joe earlier this morning, giving a little bit of an update on Tage Thompson. Well, we got more of an update, as he said there right at the onset, that, well, we'll learn more later today. We have all Sabres reporters are tweeting out, including our own Paul Hamilton. Tage Thompson is on the ice this morning for practice. Jordan Greenway, though, still absent and still on IR. Not too surprising for him, but it'd be really, really nice, Josh, to get Tage Thompson back. Real quick, though, I do want to mention this because we were talking about UB football, and I wanted to mention UB basketball as well. The women are in action tonight at 6 against Niagara. They are undefeated, 5-0. Becky Burke in her third year, taking the team from 12-16 her first year, 19-14 last year, 5-0 this year. And then I'm going to say this sort of as a joke, but I do mean it. Really good by UB men getting a win last night against North Carolina A&T. They were 2.5-point favorites at home, which tells you how close that game was. They ultimately get a 1-point win. With that, they are 4-3 to start this year, thus matching their win total from last year. I know it's not a lot, but it does mean something. You won four games last year for the men's program to now win four before you've even started MAC conference play and to be getting really, really good play out of a number of your young guys, namely Ryan Sable, who's averaging, I think, 18 points per game, 48% from three. You've got Ben Michaels, a freshman from Canada, in double-digit scoring as well. He's also a 40% three-point shooter. You're getting good minutes, good production out of some of your young guys. So hopefully both George Halkovich and we already kind of are seeing Becky Burke potentially getting those UB basketball programs back to relevancy like they were before 2020, those late 20-teens. They were a lot of fun. But to the Tage Thompson point, Josh.
Mm-hmm.
Them going 4-1 without him, to me, is still maybe the most impressive thing. Yes, you're beating teams like Anaheim and San Jose. I get it. But I even saw a tweet this morning. San Jose, since Macklin Celebrini has been back, they've been like 7-5-1.
Oh, yeah.
So they've not necessarily been a bad team wins. Yeah. He's been back.
Right. And the thing is, too, is you can finally see this team not – like, they're not making excuses anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, it's not, oh, well, our number one guy's down. Well, like, I guess we don't have to show up anymore. Mm-hmm. No, it's they're actually going out there and they're playing through stuff like that. It's not debilitating to them anymore, and I think it's partially it's a large part due to what Lindy Ruff has done with the team so far. I think it's also a big part, I think, in what guys like Jason Zucker, Ryan McLeod, and even Sam Lafferty and Abbe Kubel have brought to the team in terms of just that outside perspective of. And Bo Byram, too, because, yeah, sure, Byram came in last year, but he came in towards the end of the year. It was kind of just a falling, like, a move that fell flat eventually.
Yeah.
But it was, it's that different perspective of these guys are coming from proven winners or they're younger and they want to make their own mark, like Ryan McLeod. He hasn't really had a chance to make his own mark in the NHL because he's been behind McDavid, Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, Leon Draisaitl, all those guys. So... now you have all these players coming in, and they're actually going out there, and they're winning hockey games through this resiliency. And that was one of the things Seth Appert talked about today was with Jeremy and Joe, was the resiliency of being able to win games 1-0, come back in games and win it in overtime, come back in games and win it in regulation with shorthanded goals.
Yeah.
Like those things are things we have not seen the Sabres do consistently over the last few years, and that's been a large part of their problem. But now you're seeing them on a three-game winning streak, winning 7 of their last 9, and having 7 of their next 8 games at home. That's a massive thing. Like that's really big, especially around this time of the year, too, because this is the time of year where you start to see teams separate. I mean, we've been talking about the stat. I think Paul initially brought it up. Maybe it was Joe. One of them initially brought it up, the whole, you know, 80% of teams in a playoff spot by Thanksgiving make the playoffs.
Brayton, I think, had the stat last week, which was like it's now up to like 77.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, and but so still, regardless, you're at the point right now. I think they're actually in a wild card spot right now after the results of last night.
Mm-hmm.
But still, you're in a playoff spot right now. That's something that you haven't been able to see consistently over the past few years in terms of, you know, having more points than you have games played and consistently staying in the race.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's something that's completely different that we haven't seen the Sabres team do in a long time. And it's not feeling like it's going to slow down. This is going to be a tough test over the next few games because they are going to have some of the better teams in the NHL coming to town.
Yep.
But still, they've beaten the Rangers 6-1. Like to be fair, the Rangers have.
The Rangers are actually
falling apart a little bit. But at the time, the Rangers were still one of the top teams in the league, and they were still performing very well. But I think honestly, that 6-1 win has kind of sent them into a bit of a spiral.
They haven't had fun.
No, I mean,
you're also seeing though a team like Florida, who you've been able to split with early in the season, they are not having a good time. They lost again last night to Washington, I believe 4-1, which now is 6 of their last 7 games they've lost.
Wow.
And now I think they are on a 4-game losing streak, something like that.
They're still hanging out at 25 points, too.
I will ask you, though, And I'm only saying this because I've seen a lot on social media. How much have you been thinking about the 2018-19 season and that 10-game win streak?
Not at all.
You haven't at all?
Nope. I mean, I have because I've been seeing, you know, hey, on this day they won the seventh game or the sixth game. Like,
totally
I
totally have been thinking about
I
it.
I haven't been thinking about it at all.
Because I totally have.
This is those games, mm-hmm. Well, yes, it was an incredible time. I mean, I remember them winning the eighth game. That was the one where when they won that, they went to the first place in the entire league. Mm-hmm. And I still remember screenshotting that, posting it to Twitter, posting on literally every bit of social media saying, the Sabres are back. Here they are. Jack Eichel and Sam Reinhardt are going to win a Stanley
Cup.
Get
used to it.
We all thought that they were going to split the Conn Smythe in half and give it to Eichel and Reinhardt, and, you know, everything was going to be great. But this team is not like that team. I mean, you look at that season and that win streak.
Do you want the numbers? I have the numbers.
I was about to actually bring up the schedule, because that was like, you know, we were all riding high on that team because they were winning 10. They won 10 games in a row.
Of those 10 games, though, do you know how many of them went in either into overtime or shootout?
I'm looking at it right now.
It's like five,
six, seven,
seven,
seven of
so
them.
So good. And then
including the last three.
And then the other ones that aren't in an overtime or shootout are a 2-1 win, a 3-2 win, a 5-2 win. Like, only one game was by more than one goal.
Mm-hmm. It was Philadelphia, and then
everything else was a one goal.
It was a one goal game,
either in a shootout or overtime, or they squeak it out in regulation.
Yeah,
and then you go on a 5-game losing streak right after that. Gotta love it. But
although
I don't,
to me and Paul's point, you picked up 2 loser points in the middle of that 5-game losing streak. Well, you did have 2 overtime
sure.
losses.
Yeah, yeah. And even at the end of that, you were 17-9-4 mm-hmm. at the start of December. Man, that team. What a disappointment.
But the reason I do bring it up,
now I'm thinking about it. But like I haven't been thinking about it at all during this whole span, because this team, the way they're winning games and the way they're even playing games in losses, aside from that Philadelphia game last Saturday, well, mm-hmm. abysmal, or two Saturdays ago, abysmal. But when they're losing games, it's close wins or it's close losses. Mm-hmm. It's not like the only times they've really been blown out were the first two games of the year. The one game against Columbus, the game against Montreal, and the game against Philly.
Mm-hmm.
And that's 5 of your 9 losses.
Yeah.
But they haven't been as frequent. I mean, sure, the Montreal one's a little fluky. It was 7-5. And the Philly one was bad. It was 5-2. But before that, you have a 2-1 loss to Detroit, where you kind of just got goalied a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
A 4-3 loss against the Islanders, where the Islanders played their boring style of hockey and, you know, they were just annoying. And a 5-2 loss to the Panthers, which that was a fully healthy Panthers team.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that but it feels different in terms of the way that they're winning these games and the way that they're playing these games is it's a safe style of hockey. But it's also creating offense at the same time. It's this. You almost have like a safety net every time they get the puck, because you're either having your defensive line out there with your offensive defenseman, or you're having your defensive defenseman out there with your offensive line.
Mm-hmm.
That's what's great about the way this lineup has been built. And even in the last 5 games that Tage Thompson has been out, you're 4-1. So having Tage come back and be fully healthy, hopefully, is just another boost. I mean, That's the whole thing, is why I'm okay with them not rushing him back, is you've been successful. Mm-hmm. The only time you weren't successful was just in a very rough game where your goalie gets just blown out. I mean, then he gets sent down to Rochester. So,
and he's been doing well there.
And he's been doing good, yeah.
So you got to feel happy about that.
I will tell you, though. To go back to the original point, I have not thought about that winning streak because of the way they're playing this style of hockey.
I have been thinking about it, mainly only due to the fact of, on November 27th, I know today is the 26th, so you know, mm-hmm. we can, I guess, do this more tomorrow when they do play Minnesota. But on November 27th, I was at that game, the San Jose game. That's the overtime win.
Oh, wow. I didn't realize that they lined up that easily. Huh.
And at that point, they're at 36 points. If the Sabres were to beat Minnesota tomorrow, they'd be at 25. I agree with you. I think they are playing much better hockey, and I'm being completely honest here. The Tage Thompson injury, almost to my psyche, has been a positive, because I've seen this team, like you said, go 4-1 in this window and play really, really well and eke out wins, sweep the California trip. They're putting together performances as well. Josh, since November 5th, they've only lost twice. We're almost in December.
Yeah.
They've lost twice. The Montreal game, in which, honestly, if Levi played that instead of Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen, maybe it's a little bit different because goaltending was basically non-existent there.
Yeah.
But we knew Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen, we found out later that day, was hurt.
Yeah.
And that's why he was ultimately pulled. So maybe if Levi plays that game, maybe they win that. The Philly game was, I think, bad all around.
It was atrocious.
But to both of those points, though, they bounce back after those losses. We've talked to Paul and mentioned that Lindy Ruff has brought that up of you can't string together losses, though. You can lose a game, but you got to bite it.
And the only time they've only had two three-game losing streaks so far this year.
Mm-hmm.
The one in the beginning of the season where arguably you should have won the third one because it was that stupid game against LA, the home opener.
Where you got totally goalied, yep.
Yep. And then the other one, again, we were just talking about it. Florida, New York, Detroit. In two of those games, you got goalied. In the other game, it was Florida was fully healthy and wanted to get revenge for what you did to him a couple
And they were
weeks
trying
before.
To fix their start to the season
right,
as well.
Exactly. So it's I'm not trying to sit here and create excuses because I was just talking about how, oh, they haven't been creating excuses this season. They've been just going out there and winning games. But at the same time, looking at the first month of the season is often so hard to do because it's under such a microscope. Now that you're in almost into December, you're almost in 3 months into the season, you can really see the way that they're trying to play and the way that they are playing and what that result or what that style gives you on the results.
Mm-hmm.
You look past the last three-game losing streak, like you just said. That was their first win off that losing streak was November 5th against the Senators. And that's been the way they've played this whole month has been this dominating style of play where it's you're not creating a lot of offense most nights, but you're creating a safe amount of offense and a safe amount of...
And also remember, like during this month is when they sort of figured out the power play.
Yeah, right.
And they started scoring regularly on that. I will also say, too, and this has been brought up, but you know, usually when we bring it up, we talk about how they started 0-3.
Right.
In reality, this team started 1-4-1. Yeah. They were in a tough spot. And for them to grab that and go, and ultimately, as you've seen in November, really put together a strong run here to go above 500, even if you want to do the whole fun style of, well, they also still have that overtime loss that still counts,
right.
They'd be 11-10. They're finally above 500, and they are playing well. Luukkonen is healthy, hopefully now with Tage Thompson back at practice. He is healthy. We did see last night for Minnesota, you're going to have to deal with Kirill Kaprizov. He played like 22 minutes last night. Yeah. He's healthy. He's ready to go.
He's back.
But it's at home, and I feel good about where they're going to be at Wednesday and Friday against Vancouver. You've put together a really good product that you can see on television. I hope that means then during this holiday week of Thanksgiving Eve and Black Friday, that barn is full. And that they do continue to put up good performances. Because I'm with you. From what I've seen this year, they have put together strong performances. My fear is that, the Minnesota game is just a dud. That they win three straight, they lose to Minnesota, and they fall out of that playoff spot. That's been a big thing just for me on social media, seeing it, of a lot of people talking about just being there at Thanksgiving.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's 75 to 77% making the playoffs. And then when we look at that 2018-19 team, I agree with you. It's an entirely different team. That's like 6 years ago. But they were at this point, tomorrow, 36 points, and they failed to make the playoffs. The Sabres at most tomorrow could be at 25.
That's why they say 80% of the teams.
Yes. It's just incredibly frustrating that you somehow were one of them. But to me, that is a big difference. It's an 11-point difference.
Right. But also,
East is so close. I mean, that's the thing, too.
The East
you've played so well.
Yeah.
And yet, because you haven't played in 2 days, you're now in the second wild card spot.
Right.
But you were third in the East not that long ago.
Think about it, though. This is what we were talking about this with Paul yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
You have those points on Tampa.
Yes. Yes.
You theoretically, you can get those points back because you have less games played than them. Obviously, they're not given, but you have that time to make that up. Which is what we saw them have a couple years ago when they got very close. They even had it a little bit last year. But if you want to break this down, looking at this last month of Sabres hockey, so you go to the win against Ottawa to now, right? November 5th to now. It was 3 in a row, 1 loss, 1 win, 1 loss, 3 in a row. Okay?
Yep.
shrink that down. The last four games, you're 3-1. Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
If you play at that pace, you can't roughly break down four games into an 82-game season, but it's about...
Correct, yep.
You know, it's about 20 if you cut it in half.
Mm-hmm.
If you go 3-1 every four games, that should get you to the playoffs.
Yeah, it should get you to the playoffs, absolutely.
So I'm not sitting here saying that's what they should do, but we've seen that over the past month now. They win three, they lose one. They win one, they lose one, they win two more. Like, they're mm-hmm. still on that path of winning yep. every four games, you're 3-1. It's not impossible to say that they would continue that same stretch.
No, I think especially you're getting great numbers out of your goaltenders. Reimer only one game. Ulukinen, though, sure. you've now had quite a big sample size of him going back to last year
yeah.
into this year. He's a good goaltender. Your defenseman, especially on the offensive side, Owen Power is second. Bowen Byram is third in terms of even strength yeah. points for defensemen.
Mm-hmm.
Thompson was on a heater before he gets hurt.
Yeah.
And you've been able to win games without him. You've been able to kind of figure out what's going on. You can also argue to this point, Jack Quinn is starting to look better. He is starting to somewhat figure it out. He hasn't scored against a goalie yet, but he's figuring it out.
The other guy that's it's kind of missing right now, Peterka has not scored since yep. the Montreal game, which yep. is not great, but, you know, it's not like the other parts of the team haven't stepped up around them.
Correct.
Because
you brought up Zucker a lot.
Right. Zucker has been one of the biggest pieces to this team's success so far this season, and same with a guy like Ryan McLeod. I really wonder what that Philadelphia game would look like if Jordan Greenway's there. Mm-hmm. I don't know if he makes that much of a difference, but he is
Could.
Part of that defensive and offense. Like, that line of Greenway, Zucker, and McLeod is, in my eyes, one of the most underrated lines in hockey because mm-hmm. they are balanced enough to have both great offensive and defensive abilities. Like looking at them just in what they've done so far this year, if Greenway was healthy, this would be a completely different conversation. I don't know if it's really that bad right now, obviously, but it's just Greenway being in the lineup too has honestly been something that's very, very beneficial for this team so far this year. And I think that's just because of the way that Don Granato wanted to use Greenway compared to how Lindy Ruff understands to use Greenway, because Greenway was originally kind of trying to be used as an offensive forward where
yeah.
he can have offensive output, but he's more of a forechecker. He's more of a get control of the puck and get it to someone that can actually put up the offense. Mm-hmm. And if he scores a goal, cool, great. But it probably won't be your typical, like, you know, goal scorer's goal. It'll be a scrappy net front presence type of goal.
Yeah.
Which is what he brings. But it's something the team doesn't really have without him in the lineup.
No, that's right. That's right.
Other than Zucker, actually, because Zucker is kind of that as well. By the way, did you see the video of him after the Anaheim game, I think it was?
Chirping at fans. It's yeah. so much fun.
It's just like, that's so electric. Like, banging the glass at a fan because, yeah. No.
Because he's chirping at you the whole time?
Just great.
Oh, it's so good. But he's brought a good energy. I know Paul has brought up a lot that Yuri Kulik sits with him on mm-hmm. the bench after yep. every shift, yep. and they go over it. And Paul's spot on.
Yeah.
There's really not many better players to learn from
mm-hmm.
than Zucker, especially with how Kulik wants to play. He's also getting minutes at center.
Well, and
playing well there.
Look at how much Lindy Ruff is trusting Yuri Kulik in terms of mm-hmm. putting him out there in overtime, putting him out there just at center. Well, your top center is out of the lineup, not on the top line, obviously, but still, in an important role as a guy that's only got 10 NHL games. I mean, Yuri Kulik has, for what he's done so far, like what he's been asked to do, he's done amazing.
Yep. Now there is a good chance him or Roseanne is going to get sent down when Thompson comes back healthy.
I think it'll be Roseanne, personally.
You think they'll keep Kulik up?
Yeah, I think so, just because of what he's shown.
Mm-hmm.
But I just don't know what that means for the lineup, because, I mean, it's not a bad problem, obviously, but the problem is you then have too many centers. You have to shift someone back to wing.
Yeah. Sabres lines at practice today. Top line, Peterka, Thompson, Tuck. Second line, Benson, Cousins, Krebs. Third line, Zucker, McLeod, and then Kulik and Quinn switching in and out. And then for the fourth line, Malenstein, Roseanne, Lafferty, and Nicholas Abbé-Cabell switching out there.
Hmm. Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Wait, who is the center on the fourth line?
Lafferty. I'm sorry, Malenstein and Roseanne are switching out. Then it's Lafferty and Nicholas Aubé-Cabelle.
At center, though. So
Lafferty.
I mean, it's interesting to see that Kulik didn't go on that fourth line. But I guess Lafferty is like a true center. He's not really a winger also. So I could live with it if he goes back to wing, but I have liked what he's done at center so far. Like, if it's between him staying up or going down, then put him on the wing. Because he should stay up in the NHL. He's earned a spot.
I think so. I think it does mean a lot. That overtime goal was fantastic.
Oh,
right off the rebound. Perfect shot.
Way to just be there. You know, like that. Just the awareness to be there. Because he's coming off the bench when that happens, too.
Mm-hmm. And sometimes it just takes seeing it go in the net. I've talked about that with Dylan Cousins and Jack Quinn. Absolutely should be thrown on that list as well. 803-0550, the number to call. How are we feeling about the Sabres? As they will not be in action again until Wednesday when they take on Minnesota. But then they also get Vancouver at home on Friday for Black Friday. Zach Jones, Josh Mint here in the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. This is WGR.
Instant pressure by the Sabres on 71. This will be tipped out. Alex Tuck, he's got two shorties. He's got a partial breakaway. Shorthanded Alex Tuck with a shot. Scores! Another shorthanded goal by Alex Tuck. Three on the season, and it's a 3-2 Buffalo Sabres lead. Wow.
Dan Dunleavy there on the call. Before he said it, too, I was sitting there thinking, I'm like, Alex Tuck has had a lot of shorthanded goals. Three on the season. He's doing well. He's on, like, a seven-game point streak as well.
Yeah. He's, surprisingly, he's the one that's kind of turned on the most since Tage Thompson has been out.
Yeah, you could argue some of them are more empty calorie points, kind of like the second assist sort of deal.
Right.
But then also it's like, yeah, but he's got a 7-point streak. Like at certain points, it's like, all right,
he's one of the main guys that I thought was going to have issues that Thompson was out. But him and McLeod have worked together nicely, whether it's even strength or penalty kill. Those two have been together both ways. And they've looked great.
One thing we didn't touch there on the last segment was the potential trade rumors going on with the New York Rangers, a team you mentioned the Sabres beat them pretty handedly. They got to have Igor Shesterkin basically boot off the ice, or at least based off Twitter's reactions, they were not a huge fan of his. But how do you feel about two of the names that have really been thrown around there, Jacob Trouba and Chris Kreider?
I want nothing to do with Jacob Trouba.
Okay.
Glad
we're kind of on the same page. I actually wouldn't be against the Sabres adding a defenseman, but Trouba just no.
There's a small part of me that wouldn't mind it, but I know that it would cost way too much to get a guy like Jacob Trouba here. And mainly, okay, so this brings me all back to the days of the Eichel trade rumors and hypothetical mock trades and everything, the Rangers being the main team that was in on that. And all the Rangers fans saying, well, this fourth round prospect, he's untouchable. I wouldn't trade Eichel for him.
What a time to be alive. Everything was both too expensive and way too cheap.
No,
all at the same time.
Braden Schneider? No, you can't trade him for Jack Eichel. He's way too good of a prospect. Okay. Shoes on the other foot now. NYR Louie on Twitter. I'm going to call him out for this because this is egregious.
I saw something.
This is bad. So his first mock that he put out yesterday for a Chris Kreider trade. This trade just involves Chris Kreider. The Sabres would receive Chris Kreider, Ryan Lindgren, Brennan Othman, and a 2026 third-round pick for just a couple guys on the team. J.J. Paterka and Bowen Byram. Ha! Are you... And he says, who says no? Every single comment there's some expletives in here I can't say, but every single comment. Oh, and there's this one person that chimes in. I'd rather have Tuck. At least he has an edge in his game.
Oh, boy. I think that.
In what world?
You know what, though? Like, to this point, though, and this is something I've felt a while, your favorite team is your favorite team. Most people don't pay attention to other teams.
Right. Oh, and
most
and
people
this
do not
one.
Pay attention to
other
teams.
I'm not a big fan of Byram, but give me Paterka all day. Really? You don't say.
But that's what I'm saying.
Like
most people, there are the few, don't get me wrong, but there are a lot of people that don't look around the rest of their leagues
and
pay attention to other teams.
There's a person in this comments that says, I'd like to keep Othman. This Brennan Othman, I'm pretty sure was drafted like 5 years ago.
But here, perfect example with the Sabres. We all love the Ryan McLeod trade now. But it was close to a 50-50 split on the day of.
That's fair.
Because
yep, you're right.
You're trading Matthew Savoy?
Yeah.
But we compared him to Danny Briere.
Right.
I mean, I think that's for a lot of teams, especially in prospect-based sports like baseball and hockey, is that you will get people that have envisioned what a player can be and cannot get off that. For a lot of people, and let's just go to the Sabres here, they looked at Matthew Savoy, but in 2 or 3 years, he will be Danny Briere. Right. Or he will be Braden Point.
Yeah.
And instead, he is a guy who is still in the AHL and cannot get on an Edmonton Oilers team that is desperate for depth scoring. Ryan McLeod is a pretty solid second to third line center.
Yep. And he gives you,
in moments, can give you a really good offensive output. And yeah, he's fast and into one of the top percentiles of speed. And he kind of just works. He's an NHL player.
At the very least, he is depth scoring. At the very least.
Yeah.
Looking at this Brennan Othman, he was drafted in 2021, 16th overall. Has played 3 games for the Rangers, yet to record an NHL point. Played all of last year, essentially, in the AHL, and has played all of this. He's only played 3 games, actually, so he might have had some injury problems here this year in the AHL.
Mm-hmm.
But he has 5 points in 3 games. Maybe he's not that bad, but like, for J.J. as part of a deal for J.J. Paterka and Bowen Byram. You're giving the Sabres Chris Kreider, Ryan Lindgren a third next year,
mm-hmm,
and some prospect that has no NHL experience. Sure. Cool.
How do you feel about, though, like them going in for something like this?
I mean,
someone like a Chris Kreider.
For them like talking about doing this trade, it does make sense simply because of the fact that they're kind of in limbo right now, and you kind of have to maybe switch something up.
They've been an older team for a long time. A lot of their key guys have been older for, mm-hmm, a long time. Kreider, yeah, though, 19 games played this year, 9 goals. He is injured, though, currently.
Yes, but Kreider, I think, is a guy that Kreider would be a much better get than Trouba just because of the fact you know what Kreider can do. Mm-hmm. Trouba has been kind of one of the dirtier players in the NHL for the past like 5 years.
Yeah, does not have a great
track record. And not to say, I'm not saying Dahlin is dirty, but Dahlin does have a penalty problem. You add someone else to that,
mm-hmm,
you're only encouraging him. No, I'm just kidding.
Encouraging.
But I look at a guy like Chris Kreider, and while yes, it would be great to go get a guy like that,
mm-hmm,
he would also cost way too much. Just thinking back to the whole Eichel trade days, when that was going on, the reports that came out of what Drury wanted from the Sabres and what he was willing to give in return, there was never a deal there. There was, mm-hmm, never anything that was going to work out there because of the fact of the Rangers don't want to give up anything, essentially.
Yeah, they want to quote-unquote win every trade.
Right, and you can't do that in the NHL. You have to sometimes take your losses.
I don't think you can do that in almost any sport.
Well, right. But at the same time, good GMs, and I'm not saying Chris Drury's not a good GM, but good GMs can identify the players in a trade that the other GM doesn't think is good,
mm-hmm,
right? Like, think about the Ryan McLeod trade.
Yeah.
Edmonton probably thinks they had a steal because it's Matthew Savoy. But the Sabres got exactly what they needed and more from Ryan McLeod.
So but it does sound like some of these teams, though, they never want to have that moment in the media of, oh, man, they got fleeced here. What is going on?
Right,
they
right.
never want to have that feeling and of they show up,
yeah,
Monday morning and the media is asking questions of, what the hell?
Yeah,
they
what
never
are you
want
doing?
To have that.
Right.
Where, yeah, for the Sabres, really, up until the season started, it was constantly this feeling of, cool, they've added Ryan McLeod. Which is fair. Many, if not all of us, wanted to add another top six forward. Ryan McLeod did not fill that void by any means.
But he has to this point.
Yeah.
I mean, he certainly has done what he needed to do. But I just look at, you know, this is where you can kind of break teams apart in the NHL in terms of tiers. You look at the teams that are great and have been for a while. You look at the teams that are on the rise. You look at the teams that have just the prestigious history, like the New York Rangers. Teams like that don't make trades where they can look bad. They don't make trades where they have the potential to be the loser.
Yeah, they play it safe.
Or viewed as the loser. They try to play it safe, but then that leads to where the Rangers are now, where they're running out of cap space, they are getting older, and they're not getting it done.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you have Artemi Panarin, Mika Zibanejad, Chris Kreider. Those three right there, I mean, Panarin alone makes up $11.6 million of your cap space. And I'm not saying Panarin's not a good player.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're talking about trading Chris Kreider,
I'm looking at his underlying numbers here. It's just everything is in the blue. Everything.
Yeah. What
outside of first assists and penalties? I mean, he has no assists this year. He's 9 goals.
And I get it. He's injured right now, so he's not really helping you. But who do you think you're going to get in return that can help you? No team is going to give up a player right now. Like, the Sabres would not give up a player right now for Chris Kreider.
You're just
swapping players out. Then what's the point? If you're a team that's trying to add a Chris Kreider, you're sending futures back. You're sending players back that or picks back that aren't going to be on your team for the next 2 to 3 years.
Well, and that's thankfully what the Sabres have almost in abundance.
Right, exactly.
And I think
the problem therein is that we go back to before, the Rangers don't want that.
No.
The Rangers want a solution for now. They want someone that can go into their lineup right away, but they're not going to get that for Chris Kreider. They're going to get that for prospects. They would get that for a pick or two, but they would not get that for a guy that can also go into the lineup and do the same thing that you're trying to get. If you're the Rangers, you kind of unfortunately just have to wait out the injury, at least on the Kreider aspect of things. I don't know who else they're talking about other than him and Trouba, but those were obviously the big eye-catching names.
Those are the names Elliot Friedman threw out there of like, and I think a lot of that also could just be the media, or not the media, but the Rangers putting that out there to Friedman of, no, let everyone know that essentially, quote unquote, everyone's available.
Right.
It may not actually mean that those two specifically are available, but it's a message to the team of no.
Yeah.
None of you are safe.
But I also think a main issue there with those two, Trouba's 30, Kreider's 33. Kreider is signed for 3 more years at $6.5 million. Trouba's signed for till the end of next season at $8 million.
Yep.
They're trying to clear cap space because they have guys coming up that needs contracts. Ryan Lindgren, a guy that I talked about in that egregious mock trade that a Rangers fan came up with. He's 26. He's a decent defenseman. He needs a contract next year. He probably will get – he's at $4.5 million right now. He'd probably get a little bit more than that in his next deal. You also have guys like – where'd he go? Where did Lafreniere go? Is he hurt right now?
I don't believe so. Maybe he is. Could be. Well, They're not having a good time.
I'm not seeing him on... I'm trying to find Puckpedia where his contract is. Oh, there it is. Oh, no. His contract kicks in. He already has a contract signed. His contract kicks in next offseason at $7.5 million. So they're definitely trying to create cap space. And they also still have to sign that one goalie the Sabres scored 6 goals on. I don't know why they're going to re-sign. Oh, yeah. Igor Shesterkin.
Oh, yeah.
They need to give him a deal, and he wants a lot of money.
Fair.
Which, so, in reality...
I saw last night, too, that's like the Rangers, because we were talking about the 18-19 season, like, the Rangers' underlying numbers are not good. Mm-hmm. It's goaltending.
Yeah.
And that's, yeah, to be fair, I mean, even a few years ago, you could argue that Shesterkin was holding them up.
Right.
And when they play, and when he's not playing well, I mean, to be fair, the game when the Sabres beat them, their defense was everywhere.
Yeah.
They were not good. It wasn't like Shesterkin was not making a save. It was Sabres had wide open lanes all night long.
Yeah. But that, I think, is the main thing. If you're looking at why those two are the focal points, aside from the fact that they would probably get your biggest return, it's because you want to clear cap space. So it actually might diminish your return in some cases for certain teams. For the Sabres, no, it wouldn't, because the Sabres have cap space, no problem.
Yeah.
But, I mean, if you're the Rangers, though, it's a tough spot to be in, because you're probably not going to win this trade, and you probably think you're going to. And that's
or you're going to be desperate to try to do so. And
it's going
to
delay.
We talked about the 49ers, too. Like, yeah, it's going to just delay it until a move doesn't get made. And you're sitting there. The underlying numbers are not good. They did just lose again last night to St. Louis 5-2. Mm-hmm. It did not look good by any means. What is that, Jim Montgomery's first game?
His
head coach St. Louis?
It's funny. His first NHL goal was scored as a Ranger, or as a Blue, against the Rangers.
That's good.
And his first NHL win is as the Blues head coach against the Rangers.
That's good.
So
David tweets in. This is more about the trade talks we're having here with the Sabres. Are we a better team with Ryan McLeod and Bowen Byram rather than Casey Mittelstadt and Matthew Savoy?
Ooh.
I answered immediately, we can have a conversation about Casey Mittelstadt with him in Colorado.
But he hasn't had a great season.
He had a good start. He had a good start.
Yeah.
Well, and Colorado themselves also. Bad defense. Not good goaltending.
They got killed last night. 8-2.
Who's their goalie? I saw like smash his stick on the
Georgiev.
Georgiev?
Yeah.
Yeah, he was not having a good time. But with to this point, and I'll say this, Savoy is still an AHL guy. So for right now, if they're a better team, absolutely. Savoy would not be on this roster. He's not on Edmonton's.
Right. He's not. Yeah. And
they need help.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's not like, you know, the Sabres are right there with Edmonton in terms of roster capability. But even on this Sabres roster, Savoy's not on it.
No, I don't think so at all. going to Casey Mittelstadt's stats, by the way.
It's not
18 points, 7 goals, 11 assists. He, though, is at a minus 12. Again, I think a lot of that is their defense and goaltending has really not helped. Last night, to Josh, to your point, they lost 8-2 to Tampa. Hagel, by the way, 5 assists.
Brandon Hagel.
And he had that by like the second period.
What? He could have been. Matthew Savoy so far in the AHL this year, 10 points in 16 games.
No. Yeah, I mean, you would kind of hope for more from a guy that was, what, a first-round pick back in 21, 22? You'd hope for
22,
a little bit.
22.
But you'd still hope for a little bit more. He should be dominating the AHL, and he hasn't been that guy. I mean, look, we brought this up. The moment they drafted Zach Benson, he was a younger guy putting up more points on the same team.
Yeah. Yep. You go back to that trade. And you go back to you can look at the Bowen Byram Casey Mittelstadt trade as well, and that's when the Sabres started to just make hard decisions. Now I'm not saying the Savoy one was that hard, but the Mittelstadt one I feel like it was.
It was we're either paying him, we're trading him, we're going to get something out of this.
Yeah, and I think it was the right decision at this point.
Ultimately, Bowen Byram's third in the NHL in terms of defensemen and even strength points,
and he's been getting better too in terms of his defensive numbers as well. Because it's not all offense when you're a defenseman, but at the same time, it certainly helps.
Yeah,
but. Looking at what that trade has done so far for the Sabres, I think it's kind of pushed Kevin Adams to get uncomfortable when he makes a trade. Because that's something right out of the gate he had to do as a GM, but it was kind of...
It was forced upon him.
Forced upon him. It wasn't like he wanted to do that. He had to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And that wasn't really a good litmus test for him to say, hey, this is how he's going to be trading people. This is how his trades are going to work out. Because he was trading a generational player. That was very disgruntled with the franchise.
And that's always uncomfortable.
Right, exactly. So you look at what he's done in recent trades with Byram and Mittelstadt and Savoy and McLeod, and they've both, so far, have worked out for the Sabres, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, obviously we haven't had much in terms of other actual trades because everything else has been very, whatever, picks and guys in the AHL. So...
But I mentioned it with the Ryan McLeod trade and how it's worked out. I hope maybe this now pushes him to have that feeling of confidence of I can keep making these moves.
And it sounds like he has because every report so far this season has been that the Sabres are one of the most active teams in the trade market.
Basically, since the start of the season is, oh, by the way, the Sabres do want to make a move. And it's like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
David, thanks for the tweet. That is us getting connected to our fans. Brought to you by Northtown Kia. Shop online at northtownkia.com. I'm going to take a quick time out here. When we come back, we'll wrap up today's show. You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show on WGR. Welcome back, everyone. Quick final segment here as we wrap up a Tuesday here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show, brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com. Tonight, a big UB night. The football program taking on Kent State at home, their final regular season game tonight. Looking to go 8-4 after having just 3 wins last year. Taking on the winless Kent State. Golden Flashers, 7 p.m. start, 6 p.m. pregame. It's going to be over on the Bet 1520. And then the UB women, they're undefeated taking on Niagara. They're on the road to do that. 5:30 pregame, 6 p.m. start. That's going to be on our other sister station, AM 1400. And I do want to make one other correction from the UB men's team. Ben Michaels, I mentioned him, freshman, averaging 10 points per game so far to start his collegiate career. Not from Canada, the United Kingdom. He was born in Ipswich, England. Did play, though, some of his high school basketball in Long Island as he made the jump over to the United States. Very excited for them, though. I do hope both programs continue their progression. I am actually going to go see UB at St. Bonaventure on December 7th. It's Saturday.
Oh, yeah, because that's the same day as the SEC championship.
It's the same day as all the conference championships. Nice. I'm going to be keeping up on my phone and watching. Speaking of undefeated teams, though, Bonaventure also undefeated. They are 6-0 as well. They are not back in action, though. Let me make sure, because I believe it is Black Friday. They are in action again. And that is going to be against – yeah, excuse me. They are actually in action on Thanksgiving, 5:30, going to be over on ESPN2. The 6-0 St. Bonaventure Bonnies taking on the also undefeated 5-0 Utah State.
Talking like this makes me want to start the petition now for NCAA basketball.
Already been there. I've been there for years. Game. I've been there for years.
Well, because
– Give me the 365 teams.
Yeah.
And the NCAA tournament and all that action, I'm in.
The football game's been great. Why not bring back basketball?
Football game's been great. I mean, we've talked about it a lot off air and on air. It's kind of gotten me more into college football.
Yeah.
Yes, I'm a Texas fan, but like it also partially got me to go to a UB football game this year.
It's gotten me a lot into college basketball or college football because I never was really into it, but now I'm very interesting.
But after doing a full rebuild with UB, it was like, oh, well, yeah, I'm going to go to a game this year. It's nice. Right. Like I've been in the stadium for days. Like, I'm ready to go. And so like that was a big part of it. And so yeah, like it's gotten me back into college football like I was before, keeping up with teams like me and you have talked about it, Wyoming.
Yeah.
Where we're both sitting there frustrated as hell because they're 2-9 and you're like,
I know what this team needs.
Yeah, I know what this team needs. It's me. It's a lot of fun. That's going to do it for Josh Schmidt and myself. Tomorrow we'll have both Paul Hamilton and the return of Sal Capaccio as we hope to get more on the Buffalo Bills taking on the San Francisco 49ers Sunday night football. But coming up next after a quick timeout, more on the Sabres as Sabres Live is on the way. This is WGR.